For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, pleased to be joined by Dave Minuk. Ezra Ginsberg joins us from the IR, where he has recovered from his bout with typhoid. So congratulations, Ezzy. It's good to see you back healthy, at least healthy-ish, and have been able to get rid of that typhoid ailment that was impacting you on Thursday's post-game show.
Don't forget about the scurvy. I heard you mention the scurvy on the post-game show a couple of nights ago. So
I had Legionnaire's disease. I have scurvy. I got typhoid. I got a whole collection. Smallpox. I think you had a bout of smallpox for a little while. I got a whole collection of old ailments that I can assign to you.
I'm going to tell you boys something. I think I've been tested now for COVID 5 times. I've done a couple of rapid tests, both negative, by the way. So I've got one more to do here. That's why I'm doing the show from my bedroom, as opposed to Dave M's house. But yeah, I'm still a little bit under the weather, but I'm tested negative. I just don't think COVID-19 wants any part of me. I mean, I'm triple vaxxed, but I think that they've tried to go inside of my body and they're just like, whoa, like I need to get out of here. I don't want any part of this.
Yeah, exactly. There's a long lineup of people who want nothing to do with your body. They meet every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for a couple hours.
Mainly women.
Group. Well, yes, your wife notwithstanding. It's funny though, as
she's actually the head of the program.
That's right. She's got the most regrets out of anybody.
By the way, Drew, don't mind if Naomi comes in and ask me to do the laundry, then just like forget about it and just keep going.
I won't even faze me. You should have been up early. I've already done the laundry. That's, you know, you got to have a routine on Saturday mornings. You know, if you're going to abandon your family for a couple hours, you got to put in the brownie points ahead of time. I've done the laundry already. I've done the dishes. You got to really hit that Saturday morning with gusto in order to allow for the 2-hour departure from any parenting and familial responsibilities.
Yeah, you're probably right. Can we agree though that putting the duvet cover on is the worst thing about laundry? Like I find like I can never do it right. Like stuffing the duvet in there is just like it honestly takes me like it's laughable how long it takes me. It usually takes me like 20 minutes to do it.
Dave strikes me as a guy who's more of a comforter guy and less of a duvet guy. Dave, can you confirm or deny that my assumptions here?
Confirmed.
There, I could see that coming. You only get a duvet.
Dave M doesn't have time for duvet covers. Yeah. Come on.
You only get a duvet when you're
ooh la di da, ooh la di da, Mr. Duvet. Sorry, I don't have a duvet. I'm from the North End.
When you're married, when you're in a serious relationship, that's when you get a duvet and a duvet cover. Other than that, it's strictly comforter. Or in Dave's case, he might just sleep with a bunch of towels over top of him. I'm not really sure.
I've slept, but just on this topic before we move on, because I think we're going to talk about hockey at some point over the next
I don't know
this hour.
No, the post game show had quite the segue. Was it the post game show or last week's show? I don't remember actually.
I don't remember anything on the post game show that was too.
Maybe it was when you went and did your little. Your little walk around your tour of the house.
Oh, that was Tuesday's post game show. Yeah, the background. At least that was hockey related.
It was Pimp Drew's house. Okay, go on. Go ahead.
Ezzy, go ahead. What were you saying?
I honestly don't even remember what I was going to say, boys. But
that coming from my life.
I think we should just probably just move on to hockey. I mean, I was going to mention that I did watch yesterday. I rewatched the post game show. I know you guys don't think I watch when I'm not on, but you guys did a great job. And it's not easy when the Jets get spanked like that 7-1. It's not really easy because, like, how many times can you say how good is MacKinnon, Landeskog, and Rantanen, right? So obviously, yeah. Jets fans didn't like that result. But anyways, I did tune in. No, and, it was very. You guys nailed it.
It was considerate of True North to try and move the team to Saskatoon for a month. That gave us some extra content. So that was nice of them for that 24-hour window.
Yeah, and I heard you guys talk about that towards the end of the post-game show. Like, I can tell you how long I took that seriously. Like, I realize, Elliot Friedman's one of the best in the business. Yeah. So obviously we're not knocking him, but I took that seriously for about 0 seconds. Well, I just didn't think that was going to happen.
But and I think should never have suggested it. All it does is leave people with a sour taste in their mouth. I mean, that's, you know, you can't govern or run a business based on public opinion poll. you either do something or don't do something. And if you're going to do it, then go, you know, both feet in and go for it. But don't float a terrible idea like that. All it does is piss people off. You know, there, what was the benefit from, you know, what did they learn? What was the benefit from even suggesting that? That a large portion of your fan base was going to be upset by it? Well, guess what, guys? I could have told you that before you even asked the question. It just doesn't make any sense to me what the, you know, what the end game there was. Did they think they were going to get 80% approval and say, yay, go leave, we're happy with that, and keep our money while you're at it? Sure, why not?
Never going to happen. Absolutely, there was no chance that was ever going to happen, and now it's just a punchline. So thankfully we don't have to take it seriously again, even though, as I mentioned, I wasn't taking that seriously at all. Like, there were these long Twitter threads, you know, talking about whether or not that would work and whether or not season ticket holders would approve of that. And I just thought to myself, like, guys, this is never going to happen. I mean, True North was just doing quote unquote due diligence, right? And obviously the fans didn't like it. Sorry, not the fans. The fans definitely didn't like it, but the fans and season ticket holders, which are kind of, you know, one in the same. I mean, obviously they gave True North their opinion, but luckily, guys, we can move on. And like I said, it's just a punchline. You know, every once in a while we can call the Winnipeg Jets the Saskatoon Jets, and everybody will know what we're talking about.
Ezzy, I got to say, you did have a great line when you wrote after they got demolished by the Colorado Avalanche, and you wrote on Twitter, tough night for the Saskatoon Jets.
It was subtle, and it was...
I definitely laughed at that one.
Thank you for that reinforcement, Dave. I feel like I'm not as washed up maybe as I thought I was.
No, you're definitely not washed up.
Oh, he's definitely is washed up. What are you talking about?
I don't think Ezzy's washed up.
It's funny because my daughter, Ariella, keeps asking me how old I am. And you know, the big 4-0 is coming up for me, and it's like she knows now that like I'm dreading turning 40. I'm not dreading turning 40. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to age like a fine wine, but it's just funny because she asks me every day how old I am, and it's just a reminder. I'm not as young as I used to be.
Yeah, I'm glad you needed that reminder there. I thought the back pain would have been the giveaway more than any sort of age reminder, but whatever.
Or the moles on my back.
Nobody needs to know about that. Let's get talking about the Winnipeg Jets. After we tick Ezzy's moles off the subject list, we can move on to this week that was for the Winnipeg Jets. And hey, they played hockey games, so I guess that's progress after so many starts and stops and so few games over the last 2 or 3 weeks. More good than bad in the record columns this week. 2 wins, 1 loss for the Winnipeg Jets. The win last Sunday in Vegas, which was all important, especially after the 2-week layoff. The win on Tuesday against Arizona, a Coyotes team that was game and certainly didn't make it easy for the Winnipeg Jets. And then obviously Thursday night, which was, I mean, it was just men against boys when it came to the Colorado Avalanche, 7-1 victors over the Jets on Thursday night. So the question I have for you two, as you sort of sit here and, we're out of the fog of the immediacy of the games, did you have any sort of takeaways or any, sober second thoughts regarding the Winnipeg Jets week that was and their performance on the ice?
Well, like you said, Drew, I mean, it started off great and then ended terribly, right? So it's like you mentioned, the kind of the fog of the immediacy of what happened here. I don't know if you've trademarked that line, but I kind of like it. Fog of the immediacy.
I'm getting t-shirts made right now.
Yeah, or it could be like a metal band or something. But the name of metal bands.
Yeah, fog of the immediacy. I can.
Like Rage Against the Machine, Fog of the Immediacy, something like that. But yeah. the games against.
You want to be in the band with me?
Sure. Okay. I'll be in the band with you. The games against Arizona and Vegas, I mean, for the most part, I mean, we talked about the first period, coming off of the 2-week break was not good, but we expected that, but the response was good. Whenever you go in and you beat one of the top teams in the Western Conference, and I mentioned it, the league, like, guys, like, I don't have to remind you, Dave, put this out on Twitter, like, remind yourself, no Jack Eichel, no Max Pacioretty, no Mark Stone, right? So no Alex
Martinez. Yeah, Martinez too.
Right? So yeah. Martinez is a really solid top four defenseman. So, I mean, the win against the Golden Knights was huge. The Jets needed that one coming out of the layoff. And then, as you mentioned, Drew, I mean, the Coyotes put up a valiant effort. I mean, they're just a terrible team. And we knew that the Jets, as long as they played anywhere close to their A game, we're going to beat the Coyotes. But the game against Colorado, guys, I think, I am careful not to, use kind of words like, measuring stick games and things like that. But I mean, the Jets have been spanked pretty bad twice this year by the top teams in the Central, right? Minnesota being the other one. Mm-hmm. The Jets, of course, you know, recently beat St. Louis, who I don't know if you saw last night, but they just keep rolling, right? So, I mean, the Blues, the Avalanche, and the Wild, to me, if I'm ranking the top teams in the division, I'm still putting those teams above Nashville. Like, I realize Nashville's right at the top. Mm-hmm. Or they're second. I haven't checked. Like they're first or second right now.
They're first. Yeah. They're first based on points percent. Pardon me. They're second based on points percentage. Obviously, Colorado's top in terms of points percentage, but in terms of points in the standings, Nashville has 46. St. Louis has 45. Right. Colorado 42. Minnesota 42. But the Avs played five fewer games than both the Preds and the Blues.
And I think what I'm trying to get to here is, and you throw in the Dallas Stars who are playing some good hockey, like. It's a logjam. Like this Central Division, we knew was going to be tough. We just didn't think that the Jets would be battling for a wild card spot. We thought they'd be battling for, you know, first or second in the division, right, Dave? So I think if anything, you know, it's kind of mixed what happened this week. I think you're happy that you got a couple wins to start off the road trip, but it's captain obvious to say the Jets are unhappy with the way, you know, the game in Colorado went. But I think, you know, you just can't let Rantanen and Landeskog and McKinnon, you just can't give them those types of grade A opportunities. And if anything, you know, stood out to me is that the Jets have, you know, a lot of work to do on the defensive side of the game. The Jets are going to score goals. I mean, we saw that against Vegas. You know, they can score goals with some of the best offensive teams in the league. But if you don't play well defensively, and that's what stood out to me against Colorado, like those guys are going to get their points, Dave. But you got to sharpen up, because when you lose by that type of margin, you know that there are things that still need to be worked on. And luckily they have 5 days to work on that.
Yeah. I don't think there's any question about that, as, and you know, Drew's asking for sober second thoughts. I mean, I'm going to steal one out of Drew's playbook, but the attention to detail in that game against Colorado wasn't great. And obviously they were dealing with the reality of COVID and you know, losing players before the game, and Paul Stastny obviously being a game non-COVID related game time decision impacts them for sure. But you know, I just thought, like, you know, that should have been like almost like a wake-up call to be tighter defensively and to see how your big boys, because your big boys were still in the lineup as last I checked, right? So I think that's one of those situations where you had to be able to play a better game. And, you know, Connor Hellebuyck didn't have a great game either, right? Connor mm-hmm. Hellebuyck, you know, gave up some pretty juicy rebounds in that game. And, you know, we're talking about a guy who, you know, you want to be, you know, a Vezina goaltender. He's won the Vezina. He's been, you know, a finalist for the Vezina. So, I mean, we know if the Jets are going to do anything, Connor Hellebuyck is going to be a big part of that. And so he didn't have his A game by any stretch of the imagination when you went back and kind of looked at some of the goals that went in. And like I said, some of that just was a little bit of his rebound control. And I think one of those things that, like I said, after the postgame show was the benefit of this bizarro year and schedule for Dave Lowry is that, you know, he can come off of a game like, you know, that one on Thursday and have, you know, 5 days or more to practice with his team mm-hmm. and get his guys healthy. And look, the Jets schedule is now out. It wasn't out this morning when the papers went live. But they're practicing at 11 o'clock. So we'll get an update. We'll find out maybe. I mean, we don't know, you know, what their COVID situation is going to be like, of course, because they have, like I said, Arvid Holm also, in addition to Dylan DeMello and Jansen Harkins, as well as video coach Matt Prefontaine, who were all entered into COVID protocol before the game against Colorado. So we don't
know. I love that you mentioned Matt Prefontaine as well, Dave.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
look, he's just as important as anybody else.
Sometimes he's more important.
Exactly.
if he's calling if it's an offside or not, then you should challenge it. Yeah. He's got to have a fine-tuned eye to the plays at the blue line.
And he tweeted out a funny picture of himself, like going, "Well, this isn't exactly the setup I was anticipating tonight." But you could see that he was set up in his Colorado hotel room, trying to get ready for whatever, you know, he noticed in the game. But look,
he could have ordered room service, right?
Like, well, he probably did have a little nosh while he was calling the game or videoing the game. But I think what it ultimately
should challenge that. Hang on, I got to eat this hamburger first.
Yeah, 1 second. I'm just taking a bite of my McRib. But I think like it becomes a function of, you know, you don't know what's going to happen, right? We're going to find out at 11 if there's anything, you know, additional, because these guys are all around each other. So that obviously plays into it. And, you know, Jets didn't have, it was an off day yesterday. So we'll find out about that. So we'll see. We'll have to see if there's any impact to the lineup. And we saw, like, with the Moose, for example, we're not getting to the Moose just yet, but they dealt with COVID. They lost a D pairing, two Jets prospects, Declan Chisholm and Liam Gavanke. Both them went into the into the COVID protocol before the road trip. So they were unavailable last night in Texas. So it's just a reality, unfortunately, the teams are dealing with. So I think that's something we're going to have to keep a keen eye on. Unfortunately, we are down at 11 o'clock on this show. Fortunately, the illegalcurve.com site stays up 24 hours a day.
Did you just change the name of the website?
What did I say?
Theillegalcurve.com.
Yeah, we're like the Ohio State University. So
it's like you've become your parents, Dave. Oh, are you on the Twitter? Or are you on the Facebook?
Yes.
Dave's been listening to a lot of like White Stripes and the Hives and the Strokes, so he just wants to call us the Illegal Curve now.
Fair enough.
Anyways, the point is that we'll have it up on the practice report once this show ends and the Jets start practicing.
Well said there, at Dave M, getting the plug in. And
No, Drew, that Dave M.
Thank you. That's true, Desi. Yes, that Dave M. The Jets have, it's again, the bizarre scheduling, and it's going to continue all this week as well. We know that the game next Saturday, a week from now, against Ottawa, which had been sort of still on the schedule up until yesterday, is now gone. So that's 9 games that the Jets are going to need to have rescheduled. Probably the majority of them, you're looking at that, February gap that was supposed to be for the Olympics. That's a large part where we're going to see a number of those games rescheduled. But, the Jets go next Thursday and they go to Detroit for that one-off game. And then they again have another, 4 days off, almost 5 days off until they head out on a 4-game road trip where they go east. Washington, Nashville, which is of course Central Division, and then Boston and Pittsburgh, and then the games you'd expect against Florida and Vancouver. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's not theillegalcurve.com, Derek, but I appreciate that you're checking out the YouTube title nonetheless. That's well done on your part. This bizarro schedule for the Jets is going to eventually, all this time off is going to rear its ugly head come February, come March, where that's going to be absolutely jam-packed. I mean, you know how often Dennis on the broadcasts likes to cite 4 games in 6 nights or 7 games in 11 or 11 and 15, whatever the numbers end up being. That's what it's going to be for the Jets really from here on out, starting, assuming that, say, February 1st, until the end of the season. It's going to be an absolute, killer number of games in a row for this team that's going to have to scratch and claw to get right back into a playoff spot and a playoff position. And they're fortunate in that some of the teams that are around them, it's not like anybody's really running away, with the wild card spots. Edmonton is in absolute disarray. We've talked about that last week. And I mean, you got...
I agree with what Dave said a couple of shows ago. I mean, I think you go with Stuart Skinner right now.
Oh, there's no... Stuart Skinner played against the Jets and there was nothing about...
Goalie.
You look at his numbers in the AHL, and there's absolutely no reason why you wouldn't go with him. I just, for the life of me, I don't understand what the logic is. I mean, I don't think it's salary cap related. I mean, you can try and bury Koskinen's salary in the minors. Nobody's touching it. So there's so much about why they don't try Stuart Skinner as your best option. And instead, you just keep running back with Mike Smith, who is actually already 40, Mr. Ginsburg. He's older than you and I. And, or Koskinen. I mean, it seems like the answer is right there for the Oilers, and they refuse to acknowledge it. And that's to the Winnipeg Jets' benefit, because as long as the Oilers keep struggling, the Jets and then the Kings and, the Sharks and the Canucks, all those teams will still have a chance to, stay in the race, stay in the fight for as long as the Oilers continue to, play, the level of, terrible hockey they've been playing.
Well, and it's mainly the goaltending. I mean, are we going to be talking about another year where Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are 1-2 in NHL scoring, and the Oilers can't even, they might get into the playoffs. I was going to say can't even get out of the first or second round, right? So they got to make the playoffs first. But just going back to what you were saying about, the condensed schedule, the NHL is going to have to extend the season, guys. Like, I don't see any way that the NHL is going to be able to cram 82 games in for each team, before the regular season was supposed to end. Like, I don't think that the Stanley Cup is going to be awarded in August or anything like that. But I mean, you just look at the Canadian teams. Like, you've obviously got Canadian teams playing in the U.S., but Canadian teams right now can't have fans in the stands. So, we know this could continue. Like you mentioned, 9 games have been canceled. I don't think anybody's going to be surprised, guys, if there's more games canceled. Like, we're waiting to hear kind of what the next move is. Like, are teams like the Jets and the Oilers, like, are they just going to, you know, continue to play games like they did last year with no fans in the stands? We'll have to wait and see. But it's not going to be fair. Like you said, if teams are going to have to play, you know, 6 games and 10 nights or 7 games and 11 nights, stuff like that. I mean, first off, you're going to have, you know, the risk of major injuries just because that amount of hockey in such a condensed time. I mean, it's going to happen. Injuries happen in a normal season. So I think that's something that's going to be very interesting to see what the NHL does, because I would be pretty shocked at this point if the season isn't extended by at least a week, maybe a couple of weeks.
It seems, I would agree with you. It seems almost impossible that they're going to get 82 games in and not be able to extend it. I mean, the last two home games in this month are the 25th and the 27th of January against Florida and Vancouver. And we know that the public health orders have been extended until February 1st. So you'd have to assume, based on historical precedents, that those games are also going to get postponed. And that'll mean the Jets will be up to 11 games needing to be rescheduled. And then you look at, you know, the February break. Well, the break in February was supposed to be from the 2nd to the 22nd. So can you cram 11 games into those 20 days? Well, I mean, not easily. I mean, I'm not a schedule maker, so I don't know how the matrix and everything else there would have to work in order to accommodate that. But
they may not cancel, though. I mean, that's the whole point. They may be forced to play those games without fans, which would cost them money, obviously. And then I mean, look, we saw it in the AHL. They extended their schedule already a week at the end. They've added a week. So look, I don't think the NHL can afford to be honest with you. I mean, it's funny. They're in a damned if you do, damned if you don't. Nobody wants to watch the NHL in summer. The numbers have been atrocious for, what, 2 summers now?
Yeah.
Like, nobody cares. Nobody cares about what, like, honestly, like, we barely care. We're supposed to care. So it's like, it's ridiculous when you know, you cannot take yourself out of where your kind of your realm is. And the Jets do that. Not the Jets. The NHL, sorry, does that by playing into the summer. That's arrogance. Nobody cares about hockey in August. Nobody cares about hockey in July. Like, honestly. People want to go to the
cottage. I don't think, Dave, you're going to have to go into August, but you might have to go, you know, into. I agree with you. Look, I agree with everything you're saying there. I just, like Drew said, like, can you logistically, not just, you know, based on how many games these guys can play, you know, in a certain amount of time, but like, can you logistically squish all of those games into that time frame with, you know, other events going on at arenas or just travel and everything like that, right? So. That's all I'm saying.
I agree you're gonna have to
add at least a week.
Yeah, I think what you do is, I mean, again, regardless of what happens with these last two games, as Drew just touched on, in the end of this month, I think what you do is you obviously get as many games played in that 3 week schedule or 20 day schedule as you have in February, and then you tack on a week, and then maybe the season goes, or maybe heaven forbid you actually just kind of run some of these things together and not try and make them events and. You know, like space them out and just have a draft and then the free agency and kind of keep it all, you know, I know the NHL wants to create these things, but like I said, you lose focus and people just won't be interested. People are interested in their teams. And if their team isn't involved, they're not going to care.
When is that All-Star break supposed to be anyways?
I mean, why are they having an All-Star game in this season?
Well, but I mean, there's supposed to be a whole, you know, I think a whole length of time, a whole period of time that they're going to lose. February 5th. It's supposed to be when the All-Star game is, which is
absolute idiocy.
Well, I mean, that's
the All-Star game should be all rookies. So I don't know who suggested this. I forget who it was suggested this, that the World Junior players should go to the Olympics and the best rookies in the NHL should be the ones that go to the All-Star game. Because, you know, guys, a lot of superstars aren't going to go to the All-Star game and they're going to take that 1 game suspension, right? Like we see it every year.
Yeah, well, this year it sounds like they may try and even remove that because of concerns with X, Y, and Z. So I was hearing someone talking about that the other day where they're like, well, you know what the reality is?
It was, I think, like, on insider trading or something.
Yeah, something like that, which was really relevant on the Jets broadcast for the record.
We'll leave that snide remark for now. I'll tell you what, let's take our first break. When we come back, Sean Reynolds, Rennie from Kenny and Rennie is going to join us. Mr. Worldwide Winnipeg Edition, as I've dubbed him on Twitter. Stay with us, Sean, up next. Much more Jets talk to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Bottom of hour number one, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk. Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning. Nice to see so many familiar faces, so many new faces in the chat. We ask everybody that's watching, smash the like button, turn the mute button off of your computer, whatever that is. Is that Ezzy's computer or was that Dave's computer? No? Am I the only one who can hear that? Oh, okay. Maybe it's just...
Sounded like, kind of sounded like a plane was flying over someone's house there.
I heard like a goal horn is what I thought it was, but I'm not sure what it was. In any event...
I have an update for my house here in River Heights. My kids have built a fort in the basement. It's pretty sweet, actually.
That's good. You can go play in it after the show ends, I think, as well, right? There he is himself, sporting the Whalers hat, Mr. Worldwide Winnipeg Edition. Sean Reynolds joins us on the show. Rennie, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. That's I was going to say, Ezzy, there was a time about 5 years ago my kids built a fort in the living room, and it was really comfortable. I crawled in there, and actually it was so comfortable I fell asleep in there for a while. It's good memories of the fort days. That's good stuff.
Nice.
That's yeah, that sounds like actually a very pleasant way to spend a nice little morning every now and then.
No doubt. A blanket fort. It's soft. It's cuddly. It's warm. Lights are a little dim. It was perfect.
Yeah, but you know, when the kids were kicking you in the ribs saying, "Daddy, get off our fort," you know, it's impressive you were able to still sleep through that.
I sleep like a rock. It's no problem.
You're a hero for all us parents out there, Sean.
Nice. Some to heroes wear capes, others wear Whalers hats.
There you go. Nice to see you this morning, Rennie. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Hey, fine and dandy. It's not as bone-chilling cold as it has been the last couple days, so looking forward to getting outside, maybe spending some time building an ice fort instead of a blanket fort like we've been forced to do for the last couple weeks or so.
Yeah, then, there you go.
Yeah. Obviously, brought you on to talk about the Winnipeg Jets as we continue in this sort of weird lull between games. You know, sometimes you have games, sometimes you have a week off between games, sometimes you have a game and then 2 weeks off. Just this bizarre, stretch of the schedule due to COVID and everything else. I guess, you know, once there's a more normalcy, how do you think this time off or this real sort of lull is going to affect the Jets once they're back into a normal routine, let's say?
I honestly think the timing of all this couldn't have been better for the Winnipeg Jets. Like when you take a look at what happened right before Christmas time, like the Jets were kind of struggling, right? They lose that game to Washington. They finally break a little bit of the curse with that game against the Blues. But, you know, later that week, they're supposed to play Nashville, who is, you know, we've seen what they've been up to lately, and they're supposed to play Dallas, who just knocked off Florida, who I think is the best team in hockey. Coming out of the break, then they're supposed to get a game against Chicago, which looks fairly manageable. Before they play Chicago, they're supposed to play Minnesota. There was real potential for the Jets in the middle of a coaching change and the unexpected turmoil of Paul Maurice moving on. I mean, a lot of teams, when there's a coaching change, you know, you can kind of feel it in the air before it comes. And when it finally happens, it's kind of an exhale, right? Well, when Paul Maurice left, I think in the room, there wasn't an exhale. There was a bit of a sharp inhale because people were shocked by it. So I was wondering how they would respond to that. They didn't need to worry about responding to it at that time, but had they needed to worry about it, there was a lot of tough teams there. If they lose 2-3 of those games, Calgary was coming up next. If they lose 4 or 5 of those games, the Jets are in a really, really bad spot. We're talking about them being kind of below, you know, where a team like Vancouver is now. And suddenly the climb back into the playoffs is really, really steep. So I think that first break couldn't have come at a better time. They get some time to work under Dave Lowry. I think Dave Lowry really was hammering home in those practices over the Christmas break how he wanted the team to play. And I think we saw real good examples of the Jets doing that in their next few games. Clearly that game against Colorado was one they want to throw away. But then I think that's why it's good that they're on a break now again, because what I think we saw was a Jets team that was, okay, trying on the new shoes, the new clothes that the new coach brought in, and they were having some success with it. But I still don't think that this team is over the, you know, fragility that they were showing earlier in December. And so what happens is they get spanked, and rather than having to kind of bounce back and you know, trying to reestablish their game and maybe not get to it because, you know, your confidence suffers after a loss like that, now they get a full week all over again to kind of take a deep breath, say it's not a big deal, it's one game, let's get back to focusing on our systems and how we want to play. I honestly think that this COVID break, while we know it's happening to kind of push games down the road, so hopefully hopefully we can get Jets fans back in the building in time for those games. And that side of it, the business side of it, has the potential for, you know, disaster on the ice. I really do think that, you know, if the Jets are able to, you know, continue turning things around and make it back into the playoffs, we may look at this time and this break and say, boy, oh boy, for the Winnipeg Jets, that couldn't have come at a better time.
Yeah, I think you make some really good points there about the timing, Sean, and I think we all agree with that. And it was, you know, clearly evidenced by the couple of wins coming out of the 2-week layoff. And, you know, I wanted to ask you about Cole Perfetti. Dave M might be mad that I'm stealing his Cole Perfetti time here. But I mean, you know, like he gets into his first NHL game of the 21-22 season, and he ends up playing, you know, over 10 minutes, gets a couple of minutes on the power play, and he did not look out of place on the power play at all. And obviously it's kind of tough to evaluate his game in a 7-1 loss. But what do you kind of see happening with Perfetti? It's very difficult to say with 5 days between games, but I mean, with, especially if there's still some players in COVID protocol, or, you know, Stastny's still out of the lineup. Like, do you think based on what he did in that game, that he's earned himself maybe, you know, at least one more game against Detroit? Like, what did you make of, you know, his play in that game? As I mentioned, kind of tough, you know, to take too much from it because it was such a lopsided game.
Well, I would say one of the things I think that we're all looking to watch for is how Dave Lowry responds to pushes from younger players and how you reward those pushes. So Christian Reichel comes in, plays his first game in practice. You know, when you saw him, he was like really fitting in with the guys. He was doing all the right things. And so he goes, gets that first game, doesn't get a ton of ice time, but he gets another opportunity and makes the best of that opportunity in the next game, scoring his first NHL goal. And so I don't want to put words in your guys' mouth, but I do think that over the Paul Maurice era, there was a little bit of a question when it came to younger players about whether they were getting the ice time they may have earned or even deserved in some cases, where there was definitely, I think we can all agree, cases of veterans who maybe weren't playing up to snuff, but they were going to be given the endless rope, infinite rope to kind of figure this thing out. So Cole Perfetti, Dave Lowry, I look at him and I think that he's shown signs early on that, you know, if you go out and you do the things that's asked of you, you're going to continue to get opportunities. I think Cole Perfetti did everything that was asked of him and earned himself another opportunity. And the one thing that I would say, and I'd love Dave's take on this, because no one's, you know, dug into a guy like Cole Perfetti more than Dave has. But the first couple games of the year, so the first two games of the year were Sportsnet games. It was a Wednesday night hockey game against Anaheim, and then a Saturday night game, Hockey Night in Canada game against San Jose. And we wanted to tell stories about Cole Perfetti. We had them in the queue. I had everything ready to go. We had that great story about him, you know, his parents catching the flight and coming down to watch the game. And you know what? I always watch Twitter and I watch certain things. And, you know, there's people who are Cole Perfetti fans, and I think a lot of them out there are going to look at, no matter what Cole Perfetti does, he could go pick up his groceries in the store in the morning, and people would talk about the sweet moves he made on aisle 9 to grab that bag of pasta, right?
He's skilled with that shopping cart.
We could not build enough tape in his game. There was not enough highlights for us to build a tape to tell a story about him. And I don't say that to take a run at him. I say it's a young kid playing his first NHL game. He only had a certain amount of ice time, and what he did with that ice time wasn't enough for us to kind of build a visual story to tell a story about Cole Perfetti. So that, to me, told me everything I needed to know about those first two games. It was a young player playing his first NHL games, eyes wide open, just trying to make it through. That's what I saw in those first couple of games. I went and I saw a Moose game earlier on this year, and I watched him, and I got a very good look at what it is that makes him special. And one of the things I think he does so well is he's got one of those guys that draws you in with the puck, but when he moves the puck, he's got that ability to kind of hypnotize you with the stick, and you watch where the pass went. And while you're kind of turning and watching where the pass went, he never stops moving. And by the time you turn around to say, okay, I got to get my man again, he's already gone. And that's like, I've said this down the stretch. He's going to be that player who does those really nice give and go passing places and is just constantly churning, that word that the Jets have been using lately. And I saw him doing that in that last game I saw that example of him that I saw down at the AHL translating to the NHL level. I wanted to know if Dave saw the same thing or if I'm just pulling this out of my butt.
Wait a second. Are you asking us questions on our show, Sean? What's going
on?
Well,
I am. Yeah, you guys are pros. I want to know, and I especially want to know your take on this, Dave.
No, I agree with you, Sean. I think he feels probably a little more confidence now with, you know, in his second full season now as a pro. And probably, look, there's a lot of intimidation going up to play your first NHL game. And he's got the weight of expectation, right? The 2020, first rounder, 10th overall. People are expecting big things from him. And the truth is, and, you know, one of the biggest things, for the difference between the AHL game and the NHL game, aside from the complete lack of chaos generally in NHL versus AHL, is the fact that, you know, guys like Cole Perfetti take a little time to adjust, especially because his biggest thing is probably speed. And the NHL game is a fast game. So he thinks the game at an elite level. There's no question about it. It's whether his legs have that foot speed to keep up with the NHL game. I think he's still getting there. I think that's something he's going to need to work on. And I think that's why I think the AHL is better suited for him, because he'll be playing those big minutes. But I don't think there's any question. I think you're 100% right, because you saw what he does at the AHL level against less, you know, significant talent. But there's still good gut players in the AHL. And especially because prior to the adoption of this taxi squad, the best guys were in the AHL. He had to adjust, because it wasn't like last year where a lot of those, you know, upper tier guys from the AHL were on the taxi squads. So it was maybe a little bit of an easier AHL last year. Now he's got a bit of a tougher one. So I agree with you. I think I did see it a little bit in that game, especially because he got a few more minutes in the game against Colorado. So I think that was kind of an important thing, because that's all about confidence, right? It's very hard to, what kind of impact, as you said, can you make with 4 minutes? There's almost none. You know, you play a 4 minute game, you're like, okay, what, you know, sometimes I was talking about it with Christian Vesalainen, and when someone was asking me a question, I said, sometimes these guys play out of fear and they don't want to make a mistake. So that doesn't allow them to play their game. I think Cole probably got into playing his game a little bit more in the game against Colorado, because he knows he needs to, that's what he needs to do. But again, like I said, there's still the foot speed issue, but I think there's no question about it in terms of your analysis, in terms of what he's able to do with the puck and how he can find space. It's just about having that requisite speed in order to be able to match his brain.
Yeah.
Saturday morning. Take. There you go. Saturday morning. You're watching the Dave Minuch Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Our guest, of course, is Sean Reynolds from Sportsnet, also the co-host of the Kenny and Rennie Show with our good friend Ken Weeb. Yo, Sean, you look.
Whoa! That wasn't my question.
Sorry. You're right.
Sean's question to me.
Sorry, I got confused there.
Oh, the buffet boys.
Try to jump the pew, Drew.
I was going to give. First of all, before I even ask Sean my question, I was going to give Sean an opportunity to talk about his sweet merch, because him and Kenny have some pretty awesome t-shirts in the queue. So, Sean, maybe tell all the folks about the merch that you and Kenny are putting out there.
Yeah, so we had a launch and a pre-sale, and you guys have been through the whole merch thing, and I think that at some point, Dave, I asked you a little bit of advice on it. It was a hard go. We tried to do it, and we were really interested in doing it locally, and went and checked out a bunch of different places, but what it ended up landing on is it's so hard to take orders from people, right? Like, I want a size triple XL, mm-hmm. I need a size small, extra small, whatever, and I could just foresee myself, like, going and placing this giant t-shirt order, and then 20 years from now, moving that box of Kenny and Rennie shirts around in the garage.
With all those mediums, Sean.
Yeah, exactly. So,
order so many extra smalls? Who are these for?
Exactly. So we didn't know how to do that. And so then we ended up getting Sportsnet on board, which was, it turned into like a real prove us what you can do here, because we're, you know, Sportsnet is starting to embark on sales. And we in Winnipeg wanted to like put together this shirt collection. And we've got, you know, great, like you guys do. And a lot of them, I see Sandy's here and Dave Smith and Jeff Cabiles is here. Joe from Winnipeg, everyone I see in your chat room right now visits us as well. We're so lucky here in Winnipeg to have such a, you know, committed group of people.
We're one big family, Sean, right?
Totally agreed. Like I said it last year, you guys are our brothers. We are
Remus. Screw him.
yeah. Remus is like a stepbrother.
but the idea was to try and get something out there, because, you know, like you guys will have experienced with your illegal curve swag, you know, the great people that we have watching this, they want to support us. And so they wanted merch. And so we were trying to get merch into their hands. We wanted to make sure we kind of gave them something that spoke to the show, like that kind of stuff that it's like, if you wear it on a t-shirt and you don't watch the show, you have no idea what that t-shirt's about. But if you're walking in public and you're wearing a Sean's Headband shirt and someone else who watches the show sees it, they look and there's that kind of knowing look, right? That's the kind of merch that we wanted to create. So Kenny, we've got his wake up shirts because that's, I love how Jeff Hamilton explains it. That's Kenny's swear word when he gets really frustrated. You know how Mark Scheifele loves to use the word frick on the ice? Yeah. Well, Ken Weeb, if he's really upset with your take, he'll tell you to wake up. So
it's true.
He's a gentle Mennonite boy. He's not going to swear. Totally. He's not going to swear.
Totally. Yeah. But yeah. So anyways, we wanted to get that out. We had a launch. We did really good with the launch and the merchandise people at Sportsnet were really happy with what we did. And I do know this, like it was hard to get our price point down, but our merchandise people were very happy with our 3-day pre-launch. They're still on sale. You can still go get them, but it sounds like we're going to add more to the collection and hopefully more stuff that you can get that is at a lower price point. Because we definitely, again, I know our shirts were a big ask. Our audience came through. So we want to make sure that we're giving them the opportunity if they want to pick up stuff at a lower cost that they're able to.
I think I'm going to buy a shirt just because I want to see less Steve Dangle, Sean, and I want to see more Kenny and Rennie. So yeah, let's get some more shirts up there. Like Steve Dangle, I love him, but come on.
Yeah. I was gonna say sign me up for 3 Kenny bobbleheads, but that's a separate issue altogether.
Hold on. No, I'm not done. Because first of all, that segues me nicely into talking about the IC merch. Thank you, Sean. Because yes, folks have been waiting. It's been obviously with all the supply chain issues. It's
had been kind of a few delays, Sean.
Yeah, let's just say being in the merch business has been a bit hair-raising, but it's difficult. It's not easy. But we, to your point, Sean, and it's 100% true. We do appreciate all the support we've received from everyone, not just locally, but people who follow the Jets and us, obviously from outside the province. But we are, I hope, Tuesday and Wednesday, all the orders will be going out for everyone who's supported us and everyone who's bought Legal Curve merch. So that's what I want to say on today's show, is that it's going to be, the expectation is Tuesday, Wednesday. You will have your shirts, your hats, your toques, and everything else coming your way. Hoodies, everything.
Good stuff.
Thank you for giving me that opportunity for a segue, Sean.
Can I talk now, or do you have
no, because now,
question,
now, actually, I
now
actually,
he's got to ask his question.
I'm
going to go have a snack, and if anybody needs me, just let me know. Just send me a text. I'll be back in about 7 minutes.
Heaven forbid I get some airtime on this show. Anyway, Shawnee, so right. the question...
There's an entire segment with your name billed on it.
Yes. Dave M hasn't asked his question yet.
That's not till the end of the show. Anyway, Sean, what I want to ask you, though, is about the D change. Because we did see Dylan DeMello switch spots with Nate Schmidt. Of course, Dylan DeMello went into the COVID protocol, so he wasn't available for the game on Thursday. But what did you think of that? What did you think of that move to reunite DeMello with Morrissey and put Schmidt with Logan Stanley?
Well, one of the things that I think about the change in play that the Jets are trying to get to, you know, more of a net front presence, is that I thought in these games, no defenseman has shown better than Josh Morrissey. I think he's got a real good recognition. If you go back to that Stastny redirect goal, mm-hmm. that's just a really cerebral goal by two cerebral players, right? Josh Morrissey gets the puck. There's a guy on net. He's getting his eyes taken away, but you can see that there's a bit of a wall of players and Josh Morrissey can't fire it to the far side. So how am I going to take advantage of the fact that Stastny's doing the right thing and taking the goalie's eyes away? Well, I'm going to throw it to his stick. His stick happens to be 2 to 3 feet wide of the net. But you've got a player who's so skilled, he can redirect it almost at a 90-degree angle towards the goal and ends up getting a goal out of it. And so I do think that Josh Morrissey has shown me in the last four games under Dave Lowry. One, he really knows when to jump up into the play. But two, he's got a real heads-up vision on when there's trouble at the front of the net and when to get the puck there. So I know it seems like I'm going away from your question. What I do think one of the things I attribute to that is the fact that Dylan DeMello as his D pairing is that one guy that, especially with Josh Morrissey and what we've seen from them in the past, that, you know, Dylan DeMello is not going to be trying to beat you up ice and get to the front of the net. He is going to take care of your end first and every single time. And anyone who's played hockey on defense knows that there's a real freeing nature to that. If you have any kind of offensive flair as a defenseman and you play with a stay-at-home defenseman, it just frees you up to do whatever you want to do. And I think that putting DeMello with Morrissey absolutely has freed up you know, before he went out with COVID in that last game. And maybe some of the results we see from the last game has to do with Dylan DeMello being out of the lineup. But I think doing that frees up Josh Morrissey to bring out the offensive part of his game a little bit, the same way Josh Morrissey used to free up players like Dustin Byfuglien and Jacob Trouba. I think that's an important dynamic. I think Dylan DeMello allows you to have that dynamic. And I don't want to say it's wasted, but I will say when you put Dylan DeMello on a bottom pairing alongside Logan Stanley, Logan Stanley, I think, is going to get to the place where he's a more and more and more dangerous offensive player. He's got that capability to get the puck to the net right now. But if you want to free up an offensive defenseman on the Jets right now on the left-hand side, I don't think that the player that you want to do that with is Josh Morrissey. And I don't think there's anyone better suited to do that for him than Dylan DeMello.
Saturday morning, you're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Sean Reynolds of Sportsnet and Kenny and Rennie is our guest as we're talking about the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets off until Thursday when they play in Detroit. Now, Sean, if you include all the shootout goals right now, the shootout winners and losers, as the case may be, the Jets have 99 goals for and 99 goals against. 99 goals for puts the Jets right at, you know, 17th, 18th in the NHL. 99 goals against puts the Jets right out at about 15th in the NHL. If you had to improve one of those two numbers, the goals for or the goals against, in this next segment of the season, which one do you think the Jets need to focus on?
So I'd go goals for, because I think that there's a lot of times this season that the Jets have kind of shown that defensive flair and they know how to lock things down. But I guess I would put it this way. There's been a question in my head of like this Jets team and how it's built and what you want from them. So the idea, I think what we saw from the Avalanche the other day with that top line especially, is they're skilled beyond a shadow of a doubt, maybe the best line in the league. But if you saw where their goals came from, a bunch of their goals in that game came from within 2 feet of the net. The point being, if you're Dave Lowry or even Paul Maurice before that, you can convince your really skilled players, and the Jets have a ton of skilled players, you need to convince them that, yeah, it's beautiful to score those long distance goals. Because guys, if you've played hockey before, you know that's what makes players really special, is the ability to score from distance. That's what made Patrick Laine special when he showed up. Kyle Connor is the same deal. But in the end, when it comes down to the grind of things, which that's where the season is heading towards the playoffs, and that's where it gets definitely by the time the playoffs come, those net front goals are the more important goals. We saw that in spades from the Montreal Canadiens fourth line last year in that series against the Jets. So you got to try and convince those players to do that. But the one thing that game, you know, watching teams like Tampa, watching teams like Florida, watching teams like Colorado, who have that offensive flair, is you want to give them the confidence to play offensively. And there just seems to have been so many times this season where, yeah, Kyle Connor is going, but Nick Ehlers isn't going, and Pierre-Luc Dubois is going, but Mark Scheifele is not going. If you could get, you know, the offensive side of things going here, because when you do say that the Jets basically are a middle of the road team when it comes to scoring goals, that stands out. It stands out as being wrong, because the Jets have the firepower to be, never mind top 10, top 5 in the league. That's where we know that they can get to. I'm not going to say they should be there, although I would definitely say they should be top 10 in scoring. And so I think just getting that feeling in the room that you would see with a team like Colorado that's putting up 7 goal games like it's nothing time and time again.
7 times this year they've scored 7 goals.
There you go. Yeah, there you go.
That's so incredible.
It's phenomenal. So when you're watching that, when you're seeing that happen, you think that if the Jets can get to a place where they're getting that rhythm and feeling like kind of everyone is able to score at any point, that's what I think would serve the Jets best. And if they can get to doing that and also add in the element that Dave Lowry is asking them to do, is score goals like that top line from Colorado scored the other night, then that's where that's the place where you get to where, if not only you got kind of everyone going and moving, but they are able to score those kind of goals as well, now you've got a dangerous hockey club that could do something in the playoffs.
Sean, I wanted to ask you about something that's not specific to the Jets, but obviously, you know, applies to the Jets. We were talking about it, you know, right before you came on, talking about all these postponed games for the Jets. It's 9 for other teams. It's less for other teams, it's more like, do you see any way for the NHL? I guess the question is, do you think the NHL is going to have to extend the season? Because the way I look at it, I mean, there's going to be a lot of hockey games in during that quote unquote Olympic break, because it's obviously not an Olympic break anymore. That's why I said in quotes. But I mean, is there any way that the NHL is going to be able to cram all of these games into what was originally going to be the time frame? Because in my opinion, I obviously am not the only one here. It's not my, I'm not the thought leader on this one. But I mean, it seems like the NHL is going to have to extend the season by at least a week or two, because how are you, you're not going to be able to cram 400 games into 3 weeks in February.
Yeah, that the big question mark with all that is how you can reschedule in February, right? Like, I was at the Board of Governors meetings, and one of the things that the NHL had asked its owners to do and the arena owners, and in some cases that's the owner of the teams, so maybe you get a little more people on board when you do that, but some teams are playing in arenas they don't own. And, you know, February with a wide open schedule comes along, and what are you doing? Well, you're booking concerts, you're booking circuses, you're booking magic shows, right? You got to make money. That's what it's all about.
Don't forget about monster trucks, Sean.
Monster trucks. Exactly. Yeah. How could I? Anyway, so the idea of being able to like fill the schedule with those games, the question of that is like, I don't know the bookings in, you know, Raleigh, North Carolina, or down in Arizona. I don't know how much that time they booked up. So I do think that if you take a look, there's some patterns here. There's certain teams that are allowing a lot more wide open. Or so like the Dallas Stars have just been put on hiatus for a really, really long time. So I'm wondering if maybe they have more freedom in February, and that you're seeing certain other teams didn't get as much of a break, even with COVID kind of clamping down on their team. And maybe those teams don't have as much flexibility in February. What I'm getting at is like, there are so many variables. I have no idea. I can't answer your question. I do get a little bit of a feeling, even though I know the NHL doesn't want to do it. I think there may be a bit of them saying, we do not want to do this. We're not going to do this. But to your point, they're going to have to, but they're saying they're not going to right now, because they don't want people to just say, look, we'll just cancel it now and extend the season. They don't want to get into, you know, pushing everything back. They want to try and hold it as close as they can and get things back to normal. But that said, I think you're right. I don't think that they can get everything done in February. And I am interested to see right now, all of these games are getting pushed back and back and back. I do feel like the NHL schedule makers in their mind have a date where they're just going to say, no more pushing back. Like, you're going to have to, if you're Winnipeg, you're either going to have to go to Saskatoon to get fans, or you're going to have to play games in your building with 250 fans. That's where we're at right now. It's a really interesting situation, guys, with the border in here, because it's such a different playing field, right? Like in the States, that you saw that game in Colorado, it's packed with fans. They're having a great time. They're making money, right? Mm-hmm. If the Jets are having a game tomorrow night, they're not making money. So, and we saw in Toronto already, the tarps are back up. Toronto's a bit of a different story. Their corporate sponsorship there, they don't need to worry about having fans in the seat. Listen, it hits them. It hits their bottom line, but they don't need to worry as much about not having fans as the Winnipeg Jets do after an entire season without fans. So, there's so much stuff at play here. The borders at play, the fact that American teams are making money, the Canadian teams are being asked not to. So there's so much going on here, but short answer, I do think we're going to get to a stage here where the teams like the Jets are going to get backed against the wall, and it's going to be like, sorry, we can't push this back anymore. You're going to have to play games. But I also do agree with you, Ezzy, that I do think that they're going to have to push the season back somewhat to get this done.
You know, Sean, what's your biggest takeaway from the Dave Lowry era, which is obviously very short so far, but it hasn't in terms of games, but of course he's had a lot of time for practice. So if you had to kind of say early on your first, maybe what's your not biggest takeaway, maybe your early impressions of the Dave Lowry era here in Winnipeg, what sort of things jump out at you?
So I think that there has been zero philosophy change at all. I think that Dave Lowry's view of how the Winnipeg Jets should play to succeed is exactly the same as Paul Maurice's. And it, you know what? It kind of does make sense. Like if you're talking about a Bruce Boudreau change in Vancouver, you're getting a guy come in, he's got like new ideas, new thoughts. Clearly that's working. And sometimes that's exactly what's needed. I think I'm one of the people in the camp that, you know, that I know there's a lot of people out there who think that the Jets were about to push, push Paul Maurice out the door. I don't think that's the case. I think that he had more rope to play with for at least a little while before that it would have gone to that stage. So if that's how, if I believe that, well, then I believe that the management was still okay with the philosophy that Paul Maurice had, and moving Dave Lowry just up the ranks in that same coaching staff and not making any other changes in the coaching staff, I think supports that idea that everyone's still kind of on board with the idea that the philosophy is the same. He's just going about it a different way, I think. And so I do think that Paul Maurice was trying to get the Jets to go to the net front more to try and score those kind of goals. Again, I just think they were the perfect example of it the other night, that front, that top line in Colorado. They're trying to get the Jets to score more of those kind of goals. Dave Lowry, I think, has gone about it differently. It's a very obvious, it's not subtle, like, hey guys, maybe you should go here. Practices are, this is where I'm going to put you in practice, and you're going to stay here in practice, and we're going to do it over and over and over again until this is muscle memory, and you guys just do it because this is what makes sense to you, because it's all that we've been doing in practice. And again, I touched on it before. I do think he's got a little bit of a different philosophy on how he's going to use players. I don't think we're going to see as much of the Paul Maurice had this lineup in mind, and whether the lineup that he's got right now is working, but I want this lineup, so I'm going to break up what's working to try and get this, because in the end, this is where I think we have to go. I think Dave Lowry has shown in little snippets, and this, my take on this is very much a small sample size, so I may be wrong with this, but I do get the sense from Dave Lowry that there's going to be a little bit more, you're hot tonight, you're going, right? And now, the way that the power play worked the other night with the first power play hogging as much time as they did, that kind of goes against what I'm saying, because that's very much a relic of the Paul Maurice era. But I do think that those are the two things I'm looking for. It's a different approach, trying to get the Jets to play the same game Paul Maurice wanted them to play, but trying to get there in a different way, and then rewarding players for, you know, a little bit more of a, if you're giving, you're going that night, and you'll be given the chance to go than we saw under Paul Maurice.
To your point there, Sean, there's only so many ways to win a game in the NHL, and most every coach would acknowledge it has to do with net front presence and going to the difficult areas. It's a matter, I mean, so much of it is about motivation. I mean, I think there's more tactical, you know, things that can be done in your own defensive zone than necessarily the offensive zone. But it is all about sort of the motivational factor and getting those guys to do what you're telling them to do, because almost every team has the same method of success. It's just a matter of execution and how you get the players to buy into that execution.
Well, exactly. And I will say this, like, I know that I kind of think of your question before, would you like to add more to offense or more to defense? Because they're middle of the road in both. But I mean, I know people were ripping on their net front presence against Colorado in that other game. But listen, you're not allowed to cross-check anymore. You're not allowed to murder guys in front of the net like you were able to do for so many years. And why did the NHL land on that? They're trying to create more offense. So the opportunity that exists in the NHL right now is that if you want to play the game the right way, there's almost no way to stop what Colorado was doing there the other night. So Jets fans can be as upset as they want at the Jets on that night for not stopping that net front game. But like you'd said, Drew, seven times this year, that team has scored seven goals. The way the NHL rules are right now, there's a cheat code. Go to the front of the net, and if I can outmuscle you and the puck is there, I can score. They're going and doing that. They're doing the hard work, and they're getting paid off for that. So if you're the Jets, you go do the same thing. There's a little bit of an idea here that if you're going to beat a team like Colorado, you may have to do it 6-5 or 5-4, right? You're seeing that again with that, you know, the Dallas Stars the other night. The Dallas Stars, we think of them as a total shutdown, grinded out team. Well, they beat Florida the other night, and they had to do it. What was the final score? It was either 5-4 or 6-5, one of those two. But that's what you have to do to beat those teams now, because you can't just murder Rantanen or Landeskog or MacKinnon in front of the net and bury them and stand over top of them and mug them the way that, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois got away with against Austin Matthews a little while ago. You're not going to get away with that anymore. So So that cheat code exists. You have to use the cheat code for yourself. And sometimes I know they don't like to get into, you know, a track meet, but sometimes against teams like that, that's the only choice.
Your videographer and our good friend Colin Jensen is saying that practice is at 11 and you better be there. So we're going to let you go on that note, Sean.
Jeff, he's not the boss of me. What's going on here?
Let's be honest. He is the boss of you. Colin,
you up, Sean, what's the situation? Do you guys take separate cars or do you guys ride together?
Ezzy, I never thought of that, but he's the one with the company vehicle. He should be picking me up every day to go to practice. That's that team meeting at the arena. Lots of time,
55 minutes. Colin, get over there. I mean, you're going to have to shovel anyways, right?
There we go.
Thank you, buddy.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me on, guys. Sorry I couldn't make it on last week. You wouldn't have wanted me on in the shape I was, but I really appreciate you guys coming right back to me. I love spending time with you guys.
And we love spending time with you. Be well. We'll talk to you soon. And maybe one of these days there'll actually be a hockey game in Winnipeg that we can get together at. Thank you, excellent, buddy. Have a great weekend.
See you guys. Bye,
Sean. There he goes. Sean Reynolds of Sportsnet and Kenny and Rennie fame joining us this Saturday morning on the program. Let's take a break. When we come back, more on the Winnipeg Jets. I want your guys' take on that stat that I asked Sean about, the Jets being sort of below the average when it comes to goals for, but right around average at goals against. I want to talk more about that. Hall of Fame journalist Kevin Allen covers the Detroit Red Wings, covers the entire league. He's going to join us at the bottom of the hour for some talk about the Jets' next opponent, the Red Wings. Much more to come as he's going to be stuck under a piano. Don't go anywhere. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you. But why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. I'm sorry. That was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit Rolly's.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick-cut city rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corridon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go,
"We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?"
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, where Dave M is doing renovations in the middle of the commercial break. And Ezzy, I think, was folding laundry, if I'm not mistaken. So things are going swimmingly on this Saturday morning.
Nice to see. I listened to the people. The people said, I need something over here. So I moved it over here. What do you want?
I've been saying that for years. I don't know why the impetus to do it was all of a sudden in the middle of the commercial break.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I wasn't really. I tried some things already previously.
But Dave, were you nailing nails into the wall? Like, what were you doing there?
I have a hammer here. I had some available tools.
And by the way, Drew, I was closing the door. Update, by the way, my kids are now out of the fort. It's a really good fort. And they're watching Blippi.
Blippi. Okay, I don't know what
your
that is.
Your kids watch Blippi?
No, I'm not familiar with Blippi. Really? My kids are a little older than yours.
You're probably better off. You know what? I'm not going to hate on Blippi. It's just like when you watch something hundreds of times. Peppa Pig is out of control. Like, the kids love Peppa Pig. For anybody who has young kids,
we watched Peppa. We were a Peppa family.
Are they over? Are Aaron and Sam over it?
Yeah, they are. I mean, Aaron being older than Sam, she basically controls whatever Sam wants, and
the puppet master.
She's definitely the puppet master. Her little brother loves her very much and will follow her whatever lead she has. He'll follow her with her. They're more into they're advancing up in terms of. In terms of age appropriate content, let's say, the slasher movies, they're big into those. Gruesome horror movies, you'd be surprised how many kids horror movies there are.
Hellraiser, right, is Aaron's favorite.
Saw night in our household. They both enjoyed that, thought it was very entertaining.
I told you guys a few months ago on the show, I watched the original Saw and I had nightmares. I just find that movie so creepy. That's why I can't watch any of those movies, and I like to stick to the comedies.
That's good. I mean, it's true. You know, my parents were telling me they were watching some show or some whatever shows, and they're like, oh, it's very good, but it's very sad. And I'm thinking to myself, I just don't want to watch sad things. I mean, given the sort of the hellscape we've all been stuck in for the last couple of years, it's like when I'm watching something, that I can basically turn my mind off on. I don't want to watch something that's going to make me sadder than already not being able to basically leave our houses on a regular basis.
I'm depressed enough. I'm not looking for things to make me more depressed. Like, we have 4,000 COVID cases in our province every day. I know I have to go shovel again. It's minus 20, which I guess is a little bit better than minus 40. Like, I don't need to add on more things.
I've had a miserable day. Let's watch some horrible, depressing show to really add on to that misery. I'm with you there, Ezzy. But no, Blippi is not something I'm familiar with. But Dave, I do like what you've done there. You got the Illegal Curve sticks, if I'm seeing that correctly. And of course, the legendary David's Room poster you got up there. So you're making progress. Yeah. You're not quite the Shangri-La of artwork behind that I have going on.
It adds a little bit of, it lightens up that section of the camera. So that's good.
Yeah, it's true.
And the truth is, I've always got you guys over my left shoulder.
Well, we're right there with you, brother. Let's get back to talking about the Winnipeg Jets. The question I asked Sean when we had him on a few minutes ago about, the Jets sort of being, if you look at the NHL.com standings, you would say the Jets have 99 goals for and 99 goals against. Well, really, that's a little misleading by a goal, because it factors in shootout winners. So truthfully, the Jets actually have, I think it's 98 goals for and 96 goals against. But whatever the case, they're middle of the pack in both.
Let's keep it at 99-99. It makes me 99-99.
Let's keep it there. Exactly right. Salute to Gretzky. Which puts the Jets below average in terms of goals for and above average slightly in terms of goals against.
Well, they're middle of the pack, Drew. Middle of the pack. When you say below average and above average and stuff like that, it's relative, right?
Fine, middle of the pack.
I don't have a degree in statistics, but let's just call it median.
Fine, thank you. I'm not sure that's accurate, but in any event,
it's definitely not. Yeah. Sorry, Dad.
My point being, for the next, 50 or 49 games that are left in the regular season here, which of the two do the Jets need to improve more on to become a playoff team, let's say, to really get back into a position where they're a threatening team or a playoff team in the NHL?
Right. It's a great question. And Dave Lowry and probably most of the Jets players would tell you both, right? Like, they want to score more goals and they want to be better defensively. And especially coming off of that loss to Colorado, where you give up, 7 goals and there were no empty netters, right? Because Bowen Byram's goal was on the power play. So there's not going to be I don't know why I actually said that, because you're not going to pull the goalie when you're down 6-1. But yeah. The point is, they let in 7 goals. And so you'd after that game probably say that the Jets, you know, need to tighten up defensively, which they do. I mean, look at, if you're an elite defensive team, like, look at, you mentioned, Drew, earlier, you know, that Colorado is arguably the best team in the league. And we're not talking just points percentage. Like, we're talking about overall, like, look at the team. And I would hear that. I mean, I would definitely, if you presented an argument for Colorado being the top team right now, you would probably be, you know, right. Well, but I would put Carolina. I'm a believer that Carolina is one of the best teams in the league. Florida is up there. But the reason for me with Carolina is because of how tight their system is and how well they played defensively. Like, you know, I would have to look this up, but Carolina rarely gets blown out, guys. Like,
well, Carolina's scored 112 goals, which puts them, does it put them atop the league? It puts them not quite atop the league, puts them 8th in the league in goals for. They've given up the fewest goals. They've given up 69 goals, which is obviously top in the league. The next best is the New York Islanders and the Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs have scored 108 goals, so they're very close to Carolina in those metrics. The problem for the Islanders, who've only given up 77 goals, is that they've only scored 64 goals, which I believe is actually dead last in the entire NHL. It is. Even the Coyotes have scored more than the Islanders.
And they miss a guy like Jordan Eberle. Like, I realize that, you know, they have other guys that can put the puck in the net, but Eberle is definitely a guy that who they lost to the Kraken, who they missed. But there's other issues with that team as well, right? So you just nailed it, Drew. I mean, that's what kind of I was getting at. Like, Carolina can score a lot of goals, and they don't give up a lot of goals. And you know, I mean, it's kind of similar to Colorado, similar to Vegas. Vegas scores a lot of goals, and they're good defensively as well. Obviously, you know, they've had a little bit of a topsy-turvy, you know, first 30 or so games to the season. But what I would like to see, I don't want to see that. I'll tell you that much. Yeah, I want
stop
to see
fiddling with things. Yeah, Manuk.
This isn't Kenny and Rennie, and you can only see half of our faces when you do that, Dave M. So just keep this view. I don't know if there are any other third views, tertiary views, but let's stay at this one for now. But if I can get my point out here without rambling on too much, guys, like, what I want to see, like, I'll kind of give you maybe a little bit of a sideways answer, Drew. But what I want to see is more balanced scoring. So I would say offense to me is a little bit more important. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, earlier on in the season, right? So if you want to call it maybe the first 20 games of the season, I mean, it was really Kyle Connor, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Nikolai Ehlers, Andrew Kopp. Those guys were driving the bus offensively, right? Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele. It's been well documented that those guys were struggling. And then we do have to, you know, give them a bit of a pass because of COVID, right? So both those guys were dealing with COVID and other injuries. But now what you've kind of started to see is, okay, Scheifele's offensive game, it's not necessarily where it was, you know, last year or a couple of years ago, but it's starting to be more effective, right? He obviously got the only goal against Colorado. But what you've seen is some of that secondary scoring has dried up a little bit. Like Andrew Kopp, you know, it's you know, he's had his goals and he's had his points, but it's dried up a little bit. Pierre-Luc Dubois, I mean, he was at a breakneck pace, right? Like, it looked like Dubois was going to have a 40-goal, 80-point season. And again, this isn't a knock on Dubois, because I think, you know, I would say that Dubois has probably been the Jets' best overall forward this year. I love Dubois' game. I love how he's responded. So I think, you know, what you want to start to see is a little bit more offense from a guy like Adam Lowry, right? Like, you're not going to expect, you know, him to score every night. But I think, you know, you want to get some contributions up and down the lineup. And look, I know people that are watching might say, well, you know, they got a goal from Christian Reichel the other night. They got a goal from Evgeny Svechnikov the other night. But I just don't think that you've seen that enough. This Jets team is an offense-first team. Like, this is a team that's good defensively, but we know that they thrive. We've talked about this ad nauseum. The Jets thrive when they're playing the more skilled teams. They're a team that they don't fare well when they play shutdown teams like the Islanders or the Hurricanes or whoever you want to consider more of a top-notch defensive team. So that's what I want to see from the Jets. I mean, we've seen it in bunches. We saw it against Vegas, right? They exploded for goals. And then obviously, you know, the goals dried up against Colorado, who's obviously, you know, a very good team, probably if not the best team in the league, they're a top three team in the league, right? So that's kind of what I would like to see. I don't think that we've seen necessarily the best of Mark Scheifele this year. I think Kyle Connor has been excellent all year long. No complaints about that. He'd probably be, you know, if I had to rank, I'd say he's probably been the second best forward, you know, overall for the Jets this year. So that's what I would like to see. I would like to see three good scoring lines as opposed to just maybe one line driving the bus offensively all the time, Dave?
That's because I was doing so much work in the back end for you boys that I had to mute myself. Didn't want everyone being like, why do I hear click, click, clack, click, clack?
No, nobody asked. No, we didn't ask you to do any work in the back end right now.
Well, unfortunately, when, you know, I'm doing some work, I have to get some stuff done for the show. Yeah. Anyways, the point is, I agree that as he's right. I mean, that we've been saying it for a long time. This isn't, you can't win in today's NHL with two scoring lines. You need three. You need a top three.
And well, Adam Lowry, right? Like, well, one, then that's what for we're sure. Seeing, right.
But I think one of the things that, you know, we've talked about for a long time is like, if Adam Lowry isn't scoring, like, and you just want him to be, I don't really care about where these guys are, but like, you need a third line that's producing. It can't just be I don't see it as just a shutdown opportunity. If you're just a shutdown, you should be the fourth line and have a third line, make Paul Stastny your third line center, and then have a third line that can produce goals, to me, at least. So I think, good one, Jeff. Jeff.
The Manuk mute minute.
Yes, there we go. I like it. So
this is always funny. I think Jeff needs some more airtime. Jeff is a longtime IC viewer and listener, and he's often got a lot of good comments. So let's get him a star, Dave.
Oh, okay. Drew just gave him a star. Good job. Yeah.
That at $1.25 will get you a
star, Jeff.
The point is that I mean, look, it's about balanced offense, but if you look at the teams that are around the Jets in terms of their goal differential, which I think is, you know, it's one thing actually. It's funny because it's one thing with the Jets generally has been pretty good with them as a team because they score a lot. But, you know, St. Louis is plus 27, Colorado's plus 33, Minnesota's plus 19, and Nashville's plus 15. Jets are zero, right? Dallas minus two, Chicago's minus 37. And Arizona is minus 54. So, I mean, that just put that into perspective.
Nice multiple of 18 there.
There you go. So the truth is that the Jets, obviously, their defense is important, and we've talked about it. And that's, but it's one thing we haven't really seen with this Jets team is the kind of the lack of goals, right? Versus, I mean, if you look, like I said, if you look at the other teams, Jets, as Drew said, Jets have 99. Well, the Wild have 119. Colorado's 130. St. Louis 124. Even Nashville 108. And so I think one of the things we're not seeing right now, and it has dried up a little bit, and of course there's lineup situations and issues, but that's one of the things we've seen with the Jets is that the offense has dried up a little bit. And I think that's why this mentality of a third line, if you have a third line that's a shutdown line, what the hell's your fourth line for? And so I just don't think successfully, because we see what happens when a line dries up, when the goals aren't there for your first line or your second line. Well, hey, you had a third line. And, you know, remember when you know, Mark Scheifele and Adam Lowry and Blake Wheeler were playing together on the third line and you had, you know, different compositions along in the other ones, you had more balance. And I think that to me is one of the things I don't think we see enough of, because like I said, you can't have Adam Lowry as your third line center and produce. I haven't compared his offensive production against all the other third line centers right now in the NHL. I could do that after the show. Or maybe I'll mute myself and go and do that right now. But I think one of the things that's critical is you need to produce. If you're going to be a third line center, you can't just shut down guys. You have to score. And well, so
you look at the Jets, I mean, 5-on-5, to your point, Dave, the Jets have scored 65 goals at 5-on-5 this year, which is good for 19th in the NHL. I mean, if you would have said that a team with the firepower that the Jets have or allegedly have offensively, that they are in the bottom third of the league, more or less, in terms of 5-on-5 goals for, you would say something is wrong. I mean, that is, I think, you know, the preconceived notion about the Jets was that they score a lot, but they give up a lot. Well, this year, that has not been the case. They haven't given up a lot. They've been, I think I checked 5-on-5 goals against, they're 12th in the entire NHL,
right,
which is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But, you know, when you're not scoring 5-on-5, that's really, I think, a key area that the Jets need to focus on. And maybe that is, you know, the net front presence argument. Maybe it is the net drive that, you know, will boost those numbers up. But, you know, right now, this Jets team at 5-on-5, and this isn't only a one-year thing. It's been a bit of an ongoing issue. It just doesn't have the offense necessary to hang with the quote-unquote, you know, elite of the NHL. Sorry, Dave, I interrupted you.
No, I think it's fair. And like I said, we've been hammering this point, and you've got depth forward depth. So, I mean, like I said, you're being tested right now, and we'll see at 11 o'clock in half an hour, just 35 minutes, what kind of tests they're going to face further. And the lucky thing for the Jets is they have some time between games, so they'll have time to get guys healthy and let guys heal from, like, a guy like Paul Stastny, whatever is ailing him. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, like I said, it just isn't going to cut it if you don't produce. I mean, Ezzie loves to, and like the Islanders, I mean, they're going through their struggles this year, but
I obviously jinxed them, Dave.
You did. You gave them the Ginsburg guarantee, which is obviously the death knell. Yeah. But the truth is,
I didn't even give them the guarantee, Dave. I just
Pick them to be a Stanley Cup contender?
No, to the winner.
Win the Stanley Cup, Dave. Win the Stanley Cup.
That's a Ginsburg guarantee then. I mean, okay, it wasn't like a lockdown guarantee, but it was pretty much a guarantee. It was enough to kill Barry Trotz's chances of winning a Stanley Cup. Well, coach,
you've had a really struggling year. What happened? Well, Ezra Ginsburg on this illegal curve
hockey Ginsburg.
Show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
he said that we were going to win the cup, and that was really where the tailspin began.
And I think there's a reason why Bob McKenzie, right? He never makes predictions around Stanley Cup playoff time. I think
they are fools' gold.
Listen to the Bob father.
Yeah, I mean, because the reality is, I mean, unless you randomly pick Dallas to be a Stanley Cup contender when nobody else did, then I mean,
that was a good pick a
couple years ago, of course. Yeah. Then
and a Rick bonus like that one, Dave.
He did. He called me actually. But anyways, the point is that I think, you know, this is one of the things, when you look at all the teams that have gone on to win Stanley Cups, and they're not one or two trick ponies. They don't just have one thing that works for them. And like I said, I think what you see, the pitfall of being overly reliant and top heavy, is that, you know, if something happens, if you have injuries or if you have guys go cold, you know, you don't have that safety net from a third line that's producing. And I think that, to me, is what the Jets right now seem to be lacking. So, you know, I like the composition of Reichel, Lowry, and Kopp together. I think they kind of,
I do too.
I think they work well together. But like everybody else, I think right now it's incumbent on these guys to start to produce. And so you're going to go into Detroit. We're going to talk to Kevin Allen coming up, but you're going to go into Detroit and play a Detroit team that is very good at home, right? So I think 12-5-2. So that's one of those situations where it's not going to be an easy game against the Red Wings. And so, and I think they're separated by 2 points. So in the standings, obviously in different divisions.
They score a very similar number to the Winnipeg Jets, and they give up a lot more.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's where you would think the Jets would be able to use some, you know,
that's right.
Who knows what the lineup's going to look like, of course.
Well,
but
for sure.
You know, that's where an area where you think the Jets would be able to get some goals at 5-on-5. It's not like Detroit is a shutdown team, to Ezzie's point previously about the Jets' struggles against those sound, defensively structured teams, like the Islanders and the Hurricanes that we saw earlier this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when you consider where the Jets are at right now, it's obviously not where they thought they were going to be, or many of us thought they were going to be at this point in the season. I mean, I don't think we thought that the Omicron variant was going to shut down this many games either, guys. But I think that's something to you know, work on during this time off. Like, obviously, you know, special teams are going to be a focus. But I think, you know, moving that puck. I mean, look at. I think if you're the Jets, you're to Sean Reynolds' point in the first hour, you're trying to replicate what Colorado's doing right now. You're trying to replicate what Minnesota's doing right now. Like St. Louis, like. It's going to be very similar, I think, to the year the Jets made the playoffs for the first time in 2015. Like, obviously, this team's a lot better, but I mean, this division is so stacked. I mean, it is going to be a challenge just to get in this year. I mean, you look at even like I mentioned before, like Dallas, they're not going away. Nashville, I mean, nobody expected them to be leading the division except maybe Nashville. So, you know, I think there's no question the Jets are going to have to elevate their game. And they're going to have to be more consistent offensively. I think too many times this year, you know, the Jets have been shut down. I mean, it's just inevitable. If you look at, you know, the sample size here, I mean, the Jets have had too many games where they've scored one or two goals. So, yeah, you're going to have to get more from Andrew Kopp. I think he's got one goal in his last 9 games. We talked about Pierre-Luc Dubois, right? Like, it seemed like Dubois was scoring every other game. I think he's got 2 goals in his last 8 games. So, Dubois and Kopp are 2 of the Jets' best forwards. I'm not picking on them. I'm just saying, in order for you, you know, to put together the 3-game, 4-game, 5-game winning streaks, you have to get goals from everybody on the team. So you did get that from Christian Reichel. You got that from, you know, Evgeny Svechnikov the other night. But we just haven't seen that enough. So I think Dave and I agree, and I think you agree as well, Drew, that, you know, I think you want to start to see these guys scoring a little bit more consistently. And again, I don't think it's that much of a concern, because the Jets do have so much depth, especially when you have Stastny back in the lineup, especially when you have Wheeler back in the lineup. The Jets will get healthier eventually, but I mean, that's just the reality. The Jets are in a very high scoring division.
And the Jets' next opportunity to get back on the goal scoring train comes Thursday in Detroit against the Red Wings. When we come back, Kevin Allen, Hockey Hall of Fame journalist, is going to join us, talk about the Red Wings, talk about the NHL in general. Stay with us. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuka, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning. We remind you, the next edition of the Illegal Curve post-game show, barring something unforeseen, comes to you Thursday night after the Jets and the Red Wings. I believe that's a 6:30 Central Time start, so that means post-game will be right around 9:15 or so. Not too late, not too early, just right, you know, just perfect temperature on that oatmeal there, Goldilocks. In any event, join us then on Thursday night for the post-game show. If you haven't already done so, subscribe to our YouTube channel, smash the like button. You don't have to smash it if you don't want to. You can gently press it.
We want it to be smashed.
Okay, smash it. And kudos to Dave M, who's figured out the problem with anybody who subscribed to the show on Spotify. That issue has now been resolved. So anybody who previously had subscribed and was downloading the podcast or receiving the podcast via Spotify or not receiving it, as the case may be, that should now be alleviated. And as soon as the podcast is ready.
Not should, is.
Is as soon as that issue is now rectified, and as soon as the podcast is ready, you'll be able to receive it as per usual on your Spotify feed. So that's nice that box has been checked through the efforts of Dave M. It's okay, we pay him an hourly wage, so he's just rolling in the dough.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, if I was being paid an hourly wage to rectify that issue, I'd be rich, because that one, you know, I mean, obviously it had something to do with the upgrade of the server on IllegalCurve.com. Once I finished that, I mean, which obviously the site's been running great, so that's fantastic. I haven't had any complaints. It's been very smooth, very quick. But the interesting thing for me is, like, it knocked out our Spotify. I couldn't figure out our RSS feed. If people get the links sent daily to them, I think that's still a little bit out. But the most important thing is now, because we were getting so many messages. People would message me or Ez or whatever. They'd message us on Twitter and on Facebook. And it's interesting because, like,
people need their curve, Dave.
Like, well, no, we had a few singing telegrams come our way. You know, the length people will go to.
No, I think it's more just, it becomes an assumption of what you focus on what you use, right? So, I mean, I have an iPhone, so I look at the iTunes, I see it's up and running. I tend to focus on that. So I don't use Spotify. And so when people are telling me that it's not on, I'm like, okay, well, we'll figure that out. So after a few go-arounds with a few different hosts and Spotify themselves, they got it fixed. It basically, without getting too technical, it just were two streams of Illegal Curve, the old one and the current one with our new host, because we moved our hosting out of our podcast somewhere else. So everything's up and running.
You should also mention, Dave, that we're back on Napster and LimeWire as well.
Yeah, you can download us on LimeWire. Be careful. It's pretty a lot of bugs. You get a lot of viruses that way,
just make sure that you're not downloading too many. I remember when I used to, like in grade 12, I remember vividly, I used to download songs. And if you downloaded too many songs at once, they would really slow down. So I had to make sure that I, you know, wasn't downloading Metallica and Limp Bizkit at the same time.
I think the first ever song I downloaded on LimeWire was like Glycerin by Bush or something. If you want to go way back.
No, Bush X.
Sorry, pardon me. Don't want I don't want to be inaccurate. There we go. Pleased to welcome to the program our good friend, Hockey Hall of Fame journalist Kevin Allen, joins us on the show now. Kevin, good morning. Thanks so much for making time with us. Nice to see you again. It's been too long. How are things?
And things are great. I have to apologize. I'd like to blame my computer for my lateness, but a good craftsman doesn't blame his tools. It was pilot error. I somehow lost what I was doing and wasn't able to connect, but I'm back now. So
that's the only.
You don't ever have to apologize to us, Kevin.
That's right. The only important part is that you made it here, and we appreciate your time. Brought you on, of course, to talk a little bit about the Detroit Red Wings, who the Jets will next meet on Thursday night in I was going to say Joe Louis Arena, but that's not the case. Little Caesars Arena in downtown Detroit, and of course, talk a little bit about the NHL in general. You know, Kevin, this Red Wings team, it's sort of been a gradual build, especially since Steve Yzerman returned from the Tampa Bay Lightning. From your perspective, are you seeing the continued building blocks to getting the Red Wings back to being a you know, not necessarily a juggernaut, but not being the struggles that they've had the last number of years since the heyday era of the Red Wings sort of subsided?
Yeah, and there's no question you can see the improvement. And, you know, what I always point out is that it's really hard to find a mistake that Steve Yzerman has made during this rebuild. If you look at his draft, as he's had three winning number one picks right in succession. I mean, last year, Simon Edvinson could end up being as good as Seider and Lucas Raymond. I mean, you know, those were three big-time hits. You know, he made an important trade to get Nedeljkovic as his goaltender. He's brought in Pierre Suter, who's solidified that second line, had a pretty good season, done a lot of very good things. But they're still not close to being ready to make the playoffs, in my opinion. I mean, they've been hanging around that wild card spot, but you know, they're just a placeholder until Boston gets it together and is ready to go. And now, finally, Boston just moved past them, and I think that will be the end of the road for the Red Wings. But yeah, you know, they're okay at home. They've had a good record there. They play pretty well. They have a lot of energy. On the road, their flaws start to show a little bit. You know, they're not probably big enough. They're not probably strong enough. They're certainly not experienced enough, and their consistency is lacking.
And, Kevin, you know, you mentioned the three first-round picks there, and you're 100% right. I mean, you look at the not only the drafting, but the acquisitions that Steve Yzerman has made since he became general manager of the Red Wings. And, you know, we got to talk about Moritz Seider as well, who was obviously, there was, as you know, there was a lot of criticism because he was taken higher than, you know, many scouts thought. But as we know, I mean, NHL teams, they don't care where scouts have players ranked. It really only matters where they're ranked internally, right? But the player I wanted to ask you about was Lucas Raymond, because we talk a lot about Cole Perfetti in Winnipeg here, and he recently played his third game of the season for the Jets. And obviously, you know, the sky's the limit for Perfetti. He's a guy that I think a lot of Jets fans are excited about, you know, to watch over the coming years. But Lucas Raymond, I mean, we all know that he's a Calder Trophy candidate right now, nearly a point-a-game player. But I wanted to ask you just, How has he changed the outlook of this team and the skill of this team? Because he's just what he's done this year. I think a lot of people knew he was a really good hockey player, but I mean, I think he's surprised a lot of people, maybe, you know, outside of Detroit. But just how has he changed this team's outlook just based on his, you know, speed and skill?
Well, I'm splitting hairs here, but I'd have to say Seider is more important because he can do so many different things. But Lucas Raymond, you know, you have to, even though the Red Wings were expecting him to be an impact performer, they didn't expect it this soon. And he's come in and been a very mature player. He's, you know, Swedish players in general, we can generalize a little bit, say they're usually more prepared defensively. That's just how they're brought up. They play that game. So that's helped him. He was not a lock to make the team. Yzerman made it clear publicly and to him that he had to earn his way on, that they were not holding a place for him. He said it was even likely he was going to end up in Grand Rapids. But he was so good in the preseason. And they were still a little leery because you know how preseason games are. You don't get real lineups. You know, was he playing against the AHL team or the NHL? They had to kind of sort it out. But once the season started, you know, he deserved his place on the top line. He still does. Like, you know, the league's adjusted to him, but he's adjusted. He went, I think, three of the last five games he's had no shots on goal. But, you know, he had five assists in those games. You know, he's now become a playmaker on the wing a little bit. But he fits very nicely and has tremendous chemistry with Dylan Larkin. And, you know, it's not coincidental that Dylan Larkin is having the best season of his career. He's been helped by Lucas Raymond. Jimmy Devolano told me, I think it was about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago now, that he felt that Lucas Raymond had a little Steve Yzerman in him. Now, that's high praise. I was in Port Huron, working for the Port Huron Times-Herald when the Yzerman was at his first training camp. And when Devolano said that to me, I could see what he was talking about. It's that ability to find, you know, the opening in the seam in the defense, to slide in, to be hiding in plain sight. Everybody kind of knows where Raymond's going, much like Ovechkin. But he gets there, and his release is Brett Hull-like. Like, I mean, instantaneous. It's on a stick. It's on net. So, you know, there's a lot to like about him. They're very, very excited about him. He's a great kid. You know, he's not afraid. Like, you know, he's not going to be a physical player, but he'll take the abuse. And a couple of times he's been sort of knocked out of the game or had a momentary when he was on the bench, but he was right back at it the next shift or two. So I think he's headed to superstardom.
Now, Kevin, one of the things we're used to seeing with the Detroit Red Wings is these young players developing in Grand Rapids. And that was the model for so long was, you know, the Grand Rapids Griffins were going to be the learning stage, and then you were going to develop. And once you developed, then you'd be in the NHL. How long has that kind of philosophy changed? Did it go out with Ken Holland? Is that kind of the score? Or is it also just a function of necessity because of the lack of players they had at the NHL level?
Well, to be honest with you, I think Yzerman is a lot like Ken Holland. Like, he believes you got to earn your spot. You know, Moritz Seider, even though everybody sort of expected him to be on the team, you know, the Red Wings had been watching him. They wanted him in Sweden, and he played well there. So he had sort of earned his spot before he got here. And what Yzerman says publicly, and I think he believes it is I need to see you dominate at that level below us before you're on this team. So I think he still believes in time on the farm. However, you know, he's such a smart guy. And this is Detroit. This is Hockey Town. We haven't filled the arena in a while yet. And you got to sell a little hope. And I think Yzerman's aware of that. So I think, you know, when he's sort of trying to make up his mind, I think he's going to err on the side of, well, let's bring the kids up and let the fans see what we got going here. But, you know, Berggren has had an okay season down there. He's got like 19 points in 24 games. But we haven't seen Berggren up here. So I think for the most part, they're going to be cautious. Probably not going to wait till they're overripe, as Ken Holland used to say. But I do think they're going to have to spend time on the farm before they get up to the Red Wings.
Saturday morning, you're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Our guest is Kevin Allen, covers the Red Wings for Detroit Hockey Now, does some work for Hockey Buzz as well. He's obviously a Hockey Hall of Fame journalist, having spent so many years as the national hockey writer for USA Today. You know, Kevin, one of the most interesting, I think, offseason moves was the goaltending swap in Carolina that ended up with Nedeljkovic coming to Detroit. How has he been, you know, as the quote-unquote guy in net for the Red Wings? I saw the save percentage is, you know, pretty solid. I think a 914, if I'm not mistaken. Goals against maybe a little bit higher than you'd like. But has he been enough of a solidifying force in net for the Red Wings this year?
Yeah, I mean, he's really passed the eye test, he fits really well with this young group. Everybody likes him, and I think that's important. But, you know, he's an acrobatic goalie who handles the puck very well. There was an adjustment for the team. They had a little bit of trouble. There was some miscommunication. Pucks got left. There was some bungling behind the net early on, but they've kind of sorted that all out. And now I think they're really pleased. Like, they're high on Sebastian Kosa, even though he didn't grab the net for Canada at the World Juniors. But so they think he's you know, going to be in the mix moving forward. But, you know, we're not going to see him for a couple of years. So they're pretty happy to have Nedeljkovic. I would probably project he'll be a 55-game starter next season. I think they like him that much that they're pretty solid in their belief that he'll be their number one. I think Thomas Greiss, who's been a real credible goalie for them. You know, Bernier helped out last season and was very good as well. So for the last couple of years, they've had okay goaltending. But Nedeljkovic, I think they believe, you know, takes it to a different level, and they're, you know, really pleased. And he's part of the rebuild. And, you know, I think that's a key point here in Detroit. When you're looking at players, when they're coming in, you know, is he part of the rebuild is the way I look at it. Like Nick Leddy, they were happy to get him. They wanted him to help teach Moritz Seider, you know, how to behave as a professional in the National Hockey League. But, you know, he's not part of the rebuild. You know, he's just here for a while. I mean, could they re-sign him? Yeah, maybe, if he wanted to take a shorter deal. Same thing with they love Mark Stahl. I mean, they absolutely love him. I think, like, next year it's a possibility he could be the number six, number seven to, defender. They like him that much. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. But Nedeljkovic is, you know, on this as part of this rebuild.
Now, Kevin, just getting away from the Detroit Red Wings, as Drew mentioned, you know, you cover the Red Wings for Detroit Hockey Now, but you also write for Hockey Buzz and you write about the entire NHL. And you had an article recently about Jacob Chychrun. And, you know, I thought it was a really interesting article because obviously, you know, the trades have dried up for a variety of reasons, right? Yeah. Teams up against the salary cap. COVID is obviously factored in as well. But, I mean, you almost get the feeling like Jacob Chychrun, for different reasons, is going to kind of be like this year's Alex Pietrangelo, right? And there's going to be a bunch of teams after him. And you mentioned the Boston Bruins. And I agree with you, by the way, in the article you write about, you don't really know what Arizona's doing with their rebuild. I mean, yeah. I have no idea what they're doing in Arizona either. I think a lot of people don't. But does Boston still make the most sense for you, considering, as you mentioned, they're playing some better hockey? Tuukka Rask looks like they're going to try to get him back. Like, I guess, what do you see happening with Jacob Chychrun? And is the return going to be what they want? Because when Pierre LeBrun starts talking about a Jack Eichel type of return, it seems like that might be scaring some teams off a little bit.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to unpack with Boston. You know, first of all, they've been looking for a defenseman. Like, I think they feel they'd like to get one more, you know, above average defenseman, a guy that is a difference maker back there. And boy, you know, what a lift it would give that team to suddenly have McAvoy, you know, at 25 and 23-year-old Chychrun moving in. That would set them for life. More importantly, and I think this is the key, it's hard to make a big player trade in the middle of the season because of the cap situation. I think Boston could do it pretty easily. And I also think when you look at what they want, they being the Coyotes, and as you mentioned, I have no idea why they want to trade Chychrun. I just don't get it. Like, to me, he would be part of the rebuild. Like, you know, we're talking about the Red Wings rebuilding. If he was in Detroit, he would be an untouchable. You know, the Connor Garland, why did they trade him? You know, why are they trading Lawson Krause? I mean, you know, that just doesn't make any sense. But getting back to Boston, they have the elements. Like, if I said to you, okay, Boston offers, I'm drawing a blank now. Who's the guy that?
Jake DeBrusk.
Yeah, DeBrusk. Yeah. They've got DeBrusk who wants out, and they offer him. They offer first round pick. They offer second round pick because everyone says, well, that's just too much. Like, an Eichel. Is it though? Is it too much for Chychrun? Because those three guys, when I say that, you're not bothered by that deal. That those three elements to get Chychrun, I think people would do that. Now all of a sudden we're just talking about one more piece, and we got the Eichel deal. So I think the ask is not too high. I think his salary makes him even more attractive. It's less than $5 million. It's $4.6 million. You got him this year and three more. I think he's just scratched the surface. He's played on a poor hockey team. Wait till he gets with a good team. You know, he's got some muscle, he's got some size, you know, he's got a big shot. Like, there's just a lot to like about him. So I just think Boston, there are other teams that are going to be interested. I think the Blues are going to get in it. I think there are a lot of teams. But I think Boston, to me, would be the clubhouse leader because I think they can make that trade without really hurting their team. And that's hard to do, given the, you know, how much you're going to give up. But I think they could do it.
Kevin, I'm going to take us back to the wing wheel because I love to focus on the Detroit Red Wings. But, you know,
Dave did live in Michigan, so
I did spend some time in Michigan. So yeah. I'm a big fan of the Red Wings, and those are the Joe Louis days. But still, you know, I think Dylan Larkin is approaching the 1 year mark now as captain of the Red Wings. And what kind of impact has he had as the captain, especially being a Michigan born guy?
Well, I'll give you a story to tell you what kind of impact he had. After they played the Bruins, they came out for the Zoom interview, and Captain Dylan Larkin stood at the podium, and people asked him about, you know, the Bruins roughed up the Red Wings a little bit. And Dylan said, you know, I've noticed when we play a physical team, we turn in a mediocre performance, is what he said. Now, that's the captain talking there. So next game, Giovanni Smith, who hasn't had a good year and the Red Wings are waiting for him to do something. Well, everybody likes Dylan Larkin. So when the captain says we're not physical enough, Giovanni Smith went out and mixed it up, got going, hit some people, ended up in a fight, probably took a bad penalty. But afterward, Jeff Blashill, the coach, said, well, I wasn't really bothered by that penalty. I liked how hard he was playing and everything else. I don't want players to get hurt, so I'm fine if they want to, you know, eject him for that. But I'm not mad at Jamonte Smith for doing that. Also in that same game, Blashill, now I don't know if he's reacting to the captain, but all I can analyze is what's in front of me. He moves up Rasmussen, who's 6'6", and has sort of taken on a checking role. He moves him up to the scoring line. Now he's playing with the little players on the second line. Suddenly they're a little tougher on that second line. So I think Dylan Larkin's been a good captain. I think when he talks, everybody listens, including Jeff Blashill. I think he's got a good feel for what's happening with the team. I think he understands what this team needs to be successful, and I think he's done a good job. He's a very, very likable guy. Not only is he the captain of the Red Wings, but he's sort of one of the leaders of the American contingent in the National Hockey League. Like, I've talked with him, if you remember, several years ago when Sidney Crosby and the boys called each other and said, hey, well, let's all get together. I'll go over and try to win a world championship. Like, I think Dylan Larkin could do that. I think he has the sway with the American players that if he wasn't in the playoffs, he's so well-liked and respected for a variety of reasons that he could call people up and say, hey, well, why don't we go over and try to win a world championship?
Kevin, last question for you. You look at the standings in the NHL right now, and it is top heavy with Eastern Conference teams. Six of the top seven ranked teams are all from the East. The Lightning, the Hurricanes, the Panthers, the Rangers, the Capitals, then come the Golden Knights, and then, of course, the Maple Leafs. Of the top teams in the East, which one do you think is truly at the tippy top of those top teams?
Well, I'm not going to discount the Carolina Hurricanes. You know, they're playing at 760, I think, 761, somewhere like that. They've played consistently good all season. But the team, the two teams that I like the most are the teams in Florida. You know, I know it's hard to win three championships in a row, and I keep reminding myself of that. I really do. I try to say, you know, I've been covering the league a long time, and you know, we haven't seen anybody do that since 83. That's a long time. Mm-hmm. But saying all that, you know, they've lost all those players in the offseason, but you look up and where are they? They're on the top of the standings. They lost two key players. They played. They did more than tread water. Now those players are back. You know Brisebois is going to go get someone. I don't know who it is, but I'm guessing it's going to be a right shot defenseman, but we'll see. But, you know, he's going to be able to do that. He's going to figure it out, and that team's going to be good. Cooper's a great coach, so I love that team. I think they got a chance. I'm not sure it's a great chance, but I think they got a real good shot. But Florida is the team for me. I really like how they play. They're hard to play against. They've got a lot of players playing at their highest level. And what Bill Zito has done there is remarkable. We say that, use the expression, well, you know, you got to fire the coach because you can't change the team. Well, who says? Bill Zito went in and changed 14 players. You know, he looked at the core players, they're all good. You know who else did that too? Jim Rutherford did it when he went to the Penguins, but no one paid any attention to it. He changed like 12 guys. But anyway, that's what Zito did. He looked at the core players and say, hey, they're good enough. You know, like Barkov and Huberto, you know, Ekblad, those guys can lead this team. We can win with those guys. But, you know, the supporting cast is not good enough. So he went out and got feisty guys and tough guys and underappreciated guys and, you know, put this team all together. And I like this team. It looks like a nice blend of grit and talent and skill, a very competitive group. If Bobrovsky is going to hold it together, you know, and, you know, I think there's some doubt there. I mean, he's been very good in the past, but, you know, he hasn't been good since he got in Florida, but this year he's been good. So we'll see. And then they've got Spencer Knight waiting in the wings. And he's the, you know, the young phenom that everybody thinks ultimately, maybe even this season, could end up being the number one guy. So I like the two teams in Florida quite a bit.
Not a bad ace in the hole to have with Spencer Knight in case Bobrovsky falters come playoff time. Kevin Allen is with Detroit Hockey now. He's a Hockey Hall of Fame journalist, spending years covering the game for USA Today. Kevin, nice to see you again. Always appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll do it again soon.
Sounds good. See you later, guys.
Take care. Man. There he goes. Kevin Allen joining us here on the program. I guess Ezzie's back from wherever he disappeared to. Ezzie's back from the ether that he temporarily fell into. Nice to see you again.
I have no idea what happened there. Like, my computer just randomly shut off, okay? So I restarted it. And then when I went into Google Chrome to, you know, get back on the show, it said that my clock was needed to be adjusted, and the time was like 2019. Like,
you I know what it was? It was all the stuff you were downloading on LimeWire last segment.
Exactly.
honestly, so I had to edit the clock and change the clock back to, you know, January 8th. It was very bizarre. But anyways, it's unfortunate because I didn't hear the rest of the interview with Kevin.
Well, you can listen to him on the replay.
All he did was shit on you. It was really bizarre. He just all of a sudden
went
on a
rant. That Ginger guy, he sucks.
You know, anybody that's, I got to say this, I got to get a little serious here, but we did the show on TSN 1290, 10 years. We would always have Kevin on for the regular season preview and the playoff preview. Mm-hmm. And the format's changed a little bit. And we've had him on, you know, this format, obviously, including today. But, you know, he's one of the best. And you know, we've had a chance to meet him at the drafts. And he's just one of the nicest people. And just, I mean, he's a Hall of Fame journalist. That speaks for itself. But just what a treat to have him on and talking about the Red Wings. Because, you know, let's be honest, the last 3 or 4 years have been pretty disastrous, as we know, in Detroit. And this team is finally turning the corner. And I think they're going to be a playoff team maybe as early as next year. So big thanks to Kevin. I'll obviously text him too. But just always love having him on. He's just such a good guy and just knows hockey. I mean, he was talking about, you know, Stevie Eiserman back in the early 80s, right? So
yeah, Jim Devolano was talking.
Oh, I love it.
Some legendary hockey names.
It's a pleasure. It's one of the, you know, the absolute pleasures of doing the show is we get to have people like Kevin Allen on. So just big thanks.
Exactly. Big thanks to Kevin. Another one of the big pleasures is to be able to spend every Saturday morning and post-game shows with the loyal audience that we have joining us in the chat room. So we do thank, of course, all of you for joining us on this Saturday morning to talk about the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets next in action again on Thursday. We want to say a big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and our friends at Grid Park. Support these fine businesses because of their continued support of IllegalCurve.com, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and of course, the Illegal Curve Postgame Show.
Went to Boston Pizza Taylor last night with the kids. It's the best place to take your kids. And just thank you to the staff at Taylor because by the time that we left that table, I mean, there was spaghetti, pizza, broccoli, apple juice. Like Ruben, like
yeah,
when Ruben
goes to a restaurant, that was all you making the mess. What did your kids ate? No, your kids ate politely.
Yeah, my son Ruben, like when we go to a restaurant, like it's like we're going to a play place. Like he just treats it like as if you know, it's like one of these places like hide and seek or back in the day the McDonald's play place, right? But had a wonderful meal, had the spaghetti and meatballs at Boston Pizza, which is a little bit of a change up. I usually go with, you know, a pierogi pizza or, you know, chicken sandwich or something like that, but it was delicious. So again, big shout out to Boston Pizza. Proud to have them as a sponsor.
There you go. Well said there, as he much better than some of your previous acknowledgments of people that aren't our sponsors and where you've eaten dinner at. So good job on giving props.
When you eat at every single, have every single restaurant in the city, right? I mean, then we would have 500 sponsors.
When you have eight dinners a night, it really does cut into the number of places you can acknowledge.
And I have leftovers. I have leftover spaghetti and meatballs from last night from Boston Pizza. So I'm going to have that right after we wrap up here.
Well, on that note, let's wrap it up. So you
I had to listen to him talk about Boston Pizza and his dinner last night. I had to listen to you ramble about God knows what.
Nope.
I
mean, we got a moose win, Dave. Let's talk about that moose win.
I mean, first of all, we set our own time, so we got nowhere to be.
I have Jets, lots of Jets, places to
Jets,
be.
You have nowhere to be. Jets are practicing right
now. Yeah, you definitely have nowhere to be.
As someone just mentioned, I didn't see who it was. Cole Pivetti is wearing white at practice. We saw Mitchell Clinton talk about that and on Twitter. So we'll keep the practice report will be up soon.
White in this case indicating potentially a top six role. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And that's, I think, good because I actually was writing about it in the papers. I said, you got to give him an opportunity to see.
Mitch Clinton's playing top six?
Not Mitch Clinton. But Mitch Clinton is reporting on Cole Perfetti potentially playing top six.
Alongside Scheifele, Dubois, Kopp, Connor, and Ehlers. That's the other people who are wearing white right now at Jets practice.
Okay. So I'll be succinct here as best I can. For the what, Drew?
The Manuk Moose Minute?
Well, it's also going to be a prospect report because I got to talk quickly about 2021 first-rounder Chaz Lucius had his first three-point game in for the University of Minnesota last night, a goal and two assists in a win against Michigan State. So that's good for him. And Nathan Smith, the 2017 third-rounder from Tampa, of course, plays for Minnesota State Mankato. He also had a three-point game, a goal and two assists But for him, it's a little more significant because it means he's the number one, the top scorer in NCAA right now. So that's a pretty good thing for the Winnipeg Jets. He's got 30 points in 21 games. So a right shot forward for the Jets. That's something that they're going to need, in spades. They don't really have a lot of that. So that'll be a good thing if they can get him under contract soon enough. He's got 12 goals and 18 assists this season in 21 games. So Nathan Smith, Chaz Lucius, good nights for them last night. I think they're both back in action tonight. The Moose also were in action last night. Really weird situation. Mikael Burden still not available. The Moose had three more guys go into. They've got five now total in COVID protocol. Evan Poli, as well as the Jets prospects, 2017, 2018 fifth rounders, Kuvanke and Chisholm, who are also a defensive pairing. So that knocked them out of the lineup. Nelson Noje, he got to go back and play defense. But Evan Cormier, he's the story. 86 of 90 saves in three games. He's got two wins and one shootout loss for Manitoba after signing a contract with the Moose. He's a 2016 fourth rounder of the Devils, but he's been playing for the Newfoundland Growlers this season in the ECHL. Seems like found money. Seems to be a little bit of a goalie controversy brewing because he's been so solid for the Moose. We've got his highlights on our Instagram. I put it up on my Twitter, so folks can go check that out. But a good way for the Moose to get started. Austin Pagansky, two goals. Nicholas Jones, a shorthanded empty netter. And Jeff Mallant, the game winner. So the Moose were rolling. Got the thing started off. They got outshot, which they don't normally do, but they did play a man shorthanded. We'll see what happens tonight in the rematch against the Texas Stars in Texas.
And Dave M will have tonight's rematch covered, of course.
That was succinct, by the way.
That was well done. It's like he scripted nice. That. Yeah, Dave M will have the rematch covered on illegalcurve.com, and you can always follow Dave at ICDave on Twitter because he tends to tweet out some of the highlights and things of that nature as it pertains to his beloved Manitoba Moose. That wraps up the program for this Saturday. Yeah, beloved. You love them.
I cover them.
Yeah, you cover them. It's covered. It's beloved.
I don't love you guys. I mean, like, I don't think I love anything, really.
Okay, fair enough. That's
what
true.
Am I supposed to do between now and Thursday?
Aside spend some from time shovel. With your family. Shovel. Go shovel.
I'll definitely be spending.
As there's like four or five Moose games. You can come over and watch them.
Yeah.
There you
I
go.
Think I will actually.
I don't think so.
Well, when I'm better.
There you go. You guys can talk about that on your own after the program ends. Want to remind everyone again, we're next in action for the Illegal Curve post-game show on Thursday night, right around 9:15 p.m. So come back here to our YouTube channel. Subscribe if you haven't already done so. Smash that like button. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave us feedback on any and all of our platforms. We always like to hear what you like and what you don't like about our programming. Big thank you to Sean Reynolds. Big thank you to Kevin Allen for joining us earlier today. The show is immediately available for a replay on YouTube. Dave M is going to work on getting the podcast up and running momentarily as well. For Dave Manouk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Ruman Dell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. Follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.